Greetings, children of the solstice. Gather around the cauldron for another episode of Good Witch, Bad Witch. Which witch are you?
Deep and dark and not a walk in the park, your witches dissect the 8-episode Netflix show Monster, the Ed Gein story. Sifting through fact and fiction and lampshade nightmares, the trio explore The Butcher of Plainfield's influence on modern cinema and true crime fandom. And now, Lisa, Shelley, and Daryl.
It's Witchy Wednesday, and it is our Halloween edition, so we are going to make this spooky and scary and really, really
hairy.
Oh, good one. Welcome to your witches, who are Shelley Majors, the good skeleton witch.
Hello.
And Daryl Brown, who is your vampire witch.
Ooh. Oh, I want two twins in my name.
I thought you were going to go totally bad Asian. I don't get the vampire Asian thing. Sorry, just
completely different direction. And I'm your bad witch, Lisa Brown.
She's a bad
Brown.
Bitch.
Rika.
Don't come after us. I made him be racist on that one.
Yeah, just you're the racist one.
Not really.
No, he's not really. Asian.
Well, I came in with my Jerry Lewis.
I did say I don't like Asian.
No, but he used to do that a lot.
He did.
Parole.
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis did an Asian guy all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was never a big Jerry Lewis fan.
Probably because he was a racist.
Didn't get his humor like me and Shell when we were sitting on the couch with our parents.
That's right. He made fun of white people too.
He did.
Yeah, okay. Give Jerry a break. Okay, we're not talking about Jerry Lewis today. We will be talking about the inevitable. Is that even a good word for him?
Oh,
unforgettable.
Inimitable.
Inimitable. Well, I
although
don't know.
Although Charles Hunnam imitated him pretty darn good.
He was imitated.
Yes.
You guys, can you...
Can we, I'll name that tune in one there, Ed. Mama, I'm coming home.
So, who we're going to be talking about today is the person that this new show Monster by Ryan Murphy is based on, and his name is Ed Gein. If you don't mind, you guys, I would like to give a little synopsis of who he is.
Please.
This is from Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Theodore Gein, who was born August 27th, 1906, and died on July 26th, 1984, was also known as the Butcher of Plainfield and the Plainfield Ghoul. Ooh. He was an all-American murderer. An all-American? No, that's wrong. He was an American
murderer. All-American! Yes, I'll murder anybody!
That's another racist thing. We don't care what he was. But he was an American murderer, possibly a serial killer, and body snatcher. His crimes committed around his hometown of Plainville, Wisconsin, gathered widespread notoriety in 1957 after authorities discovered that he
exhumed.
Thank you.
You got it.
I wanted to say exhumed. Exhumed.
Exhumed me.
She wanted to make it all
God
French and
bless
shit.
You.
He was exhumed.
Exhumed. I lost my place. Exhumed corpse from local graveyards and fashioned keepsakes from their bodies and skin. He also confessed to killing two women, a tavern owner, Mary Hogan, in 1954, and a hardware store owner, Bernice Worden, in 1957. So, that's kind of the introduction, unless you guys have anything else to add to that part of it. And we kind of wanted to go into the meat of what we thought of the show Monster, Ed Gein.
I have a lot of questions.
Yes.
And, we could start big and go more deep into it, or start deep and get little, but I just decided to start with this.
Okay.
Main thing, just gut reaction. This isn't on the list or the outline. Gut reaction, what thing did you like about it the most?
Like the
style or the sets or the acting or the music or what was the first thing that, because in and of itself, the subject matter is so shocking that it's almost numbing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets overshadowed by the shockingness of the subject matter. But I guess that all in all, now that I'm finished with it, starting little and going big, at first I thought the acting, especially with, what is his name, Charlie? The guy who played
Charlie or Charles Hunnam?
Yeah. At first I thought he was a horrible actor, and then it went to thinking that he was amazing.
Yeah.
So it's funny that that happened, because I think I was overshadowed by the gruesomeness of it.
Right.
And that I thought he was overacting it. Mm-hmm. But the more that I got into it, the more that I liked his portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if that was my favorite part of it. I think my favorite part was probably how it did put almost kind of a light on mental illness.
Yes.
And also how he had I wouldn't want to say inspired, because that sounds like my favorite parts. He inspired a whole bunch of people. But I like how the show kind of put it towards how he had inspired other serial killers.
Right.
Well, even though he didn't want to be the inspiration for anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm still shell-shocked by Aunt Jackie's bush.
Yeah, it might have been
that your
bush.
Might have been. I like. Well, no, just kidding. I'm with you, Lise. I thought his acting at the beginning, it's kind of like they made him kind of dumb it up a little bit.
Yeah.
By the time at the end of it, you're like, damn, this guy deserves a freaking. He just
totally. You, they kept you got adding layers.
You believed everything, and you almost started kind of, in a sense, it's going to sound weird, but kind of feeling sorry for the guy a little bit.
Absolutely.
Like,
that was this one of the questions. This poor guy. Sympathetic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, his upbringing and the way that his mother just downplayed him and gave him, you're nothing without me. And
yeah,
and
only a mother could love you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that was the tagline clear to the end, you know, with his brother, taking off and coming back and taking off. And she's like, oh, he's just like his father, always, taking off this and that or whatever. And, but her, the way she treated him, it was sad because she, in a sense, you knew that she knew he was slow.
Yeah.
And she knew that she could overpower his mind.
Right.
And take over. So that was, when she passed away, he lost his security blanket.
Right.
He lost everything that was,
He was dependent on her
so
forever.
It was weird. And so then when it got into the point where he's hearing, these voices and stuff like that, that's where I started to really feel sorry for the guy and like, damn, what if somebody would have recognized, they had no family friends, obviously, because nobody wanted to be around them. They were clear out in the country and they were kind of weird.
Right.
But you never know how things might have changed if just one person, that one girl was his friend. But if somebody else would have, taken, we should go check on Ed or something, townspeople or something.
Exactly.
Well, I also think that she was psychotic.
Oh, she was the one that got him into weird shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I don't think that she didn't. She said all the stuff that she said to keep a finger on it.
The mom?
The mom.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
But the friend was ghoulish.
I thought you were talking about... The friend was weird.
The mom did... She didn't have psychological... I mean, did she have psychological problems? Yes.
Mm.
But I don't think she was like schizophrenic or anything like that. I think she was more narcissistic and wanted to have...
Total control
over him, and made it so that anything he did was wrong. And so it's like, if little things are gonna, like, it's kind of like it, if it's gonna be wrong to cut my finger, well, I might as well just cut off my whole arm.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, exactly.
And
yes.
Then also, she was kind of her own family's cult leader. It's like, if I cut you down enough, It'll make you dependent on me. Mm-hmm. And I want you to be awkward and not this, that, or whatever. So then you might meet a girl and leave me.
Right. Yes, she didn't want him to be
and, exactly,
attractive at all. And then when she found out there was somebody that actually was kind of attracted to him, what did she do? She beat that girl down in his head. She's a Jezebel. You know, she's a whore. You don't ever, no man should ever be with her or be, you know.
Right.
So yeah, that was another thing. Yeah. Just all these points against him.
Yeah. What was your favorite part, Shelley?
I really thought the acting was phenomenal, and I thought it was kind of, there were some episodes that were really good, and some that were dragging or unnecessary or whatever, and to be clear to everybody, whether you've seen it or not, this is a fictionalized account. That's not like claiming to be a documentary, right?
It's a fictional account of a real person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think they took a lot of liberties with that, and I thought a lot of those liberties were interesting choices. So
Agreed.
My first favorite thing was the beauty of that barren Wisconsin winter landscape. You know, it's he was born in 1906. The story takes place in the 50s, basically, when everything was happening, I think. And then there are times later where it jumps into the future, or the now. But it was so stark and beautiful, and then such a crazy contrast to the ugliness of what he was doing, and then to have him make this character into something so innocent that you actually want to protect and care for.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that it may or may not have even really known about the murders. And then when he was doing the digging up, he called it his hobby. And nobody ever told him not to do it.
Right,
He just didn't know any better. And the weird girlfriend, put it in his head to, you know, have another girlfriend while she went to New York. And he's like, how do I do that? Well, you know, you go to the graveyard. I don't know if I agree, and maybe this is crossing all our conversational lines. I don't know if I agree if all the unflinching, raw, grotesque portrayal of all the crimes and things that he did was necessary. I don't know if it was gratuitous. I think they tried to film it beautifully and make it this film noir thing. There were times I'm like, we fucking get it.
Yeah.
Okay?
You know, this guy.
But maybe it was necessary.
Right. Well, I think this guy, he goes a little overboard, the guy that did the whole show.
Ryan Murphy.
He went a lot overboard. I don't think, seriously, you know, I've read a whole bunch of stuff about the actual story, and he really did glorify a lot of things that never even happened. But you have to, because I think this guy pretty much, in a sense, I think he led a boring life.
Right.
In a sense, you know, that's why he didn't. Nobody knew what he was doing, really.
Yeah.
You know, so this guy had to up it a little and like, okay, well, let's make this a little bit more glamorous and do this a little bit more.
And I think that that's the problem with today's film making, is that if this would have come out without all of that, nobody would have watched it.
No, true.
Maybe.
I really believe that. Okay. Because stuff is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and our minds have to get more and more and more in order to suffice, I guess.
Because we're so desensitized.
Well, absolutely.
The thing of it is, okay, so it was 8 series. I know people that said, I watched it, boom, I blew through it, because they wanted to see what was going to happen next. That's right. How weird people are these days. But like you say, they got to gross it up a little, and okay.
But there were also people who stopped after.
Well, no, I know. I have friends that said, you know, this show should be banned. If nothing about it, they should not win one award for it and everything. I'm like, I did not experience the same thing you did, because I'm watching this thing going, this is incredible acting.
Oh,
you know,
acting was,
but you're right. People did shut it off, you know, at the first, but there's people that power through it. And then like you say, you got to have something like that, because you shut that one off. And you're let's say you're at work the next day going, fuck it, God, I can't wait to get home. I got to see what happens next.
Well, I mean, if we're going into a modern filmmaking anyways, you look at Ryan Murphy, mm-hmm. who did, he's done every single one of the monster ones. Mm-hmm. There's been 3 so far, and I feel like they've gotten more and more off the basis of the, because I've seen all 3 of them, mm-hmm. and they've gotten off the basis, because Dahmer seemed like it was pretty
factual
uh-huh. from what I knew about Jeffrey Dahmer, and you know, and also
he followed the story pretty good,
and also Evan Peters was fucking spectacular in that, and did win
the actor that played Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, but he's used him a lot, so they work well together.
And then he did the Menendez brothers, which
that one,
then he got a little off the cusp of that one. It had pretty much the facts straight about what happens, but it went off on some kind of, you know, were the brothers gay with each other? That sounds like I don't know anything about gay.
No, I mean, how do you say that? Because yeah, it still really happens like with them. They family have
a outside of them. Like, they had an incestuous relationship, right, I guess I should say. And stuff like that, that's never been even
documented
or talked about before this, really. And then this one became way over. Ryan Murphy also did all the American Horror Stories. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, he also did Grotesquerie.
He's a shock value guy.
Absolutely. Total, yeah. And Grotesquerie is more so than this one, the grossest show I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And if you can even imagine that something could be grosser than this. But again, getting back onto the track of, you know, did they do it just because? I think, again, our audience, especially not ours as far as that witch, but the today's audience is so into true crime. And just watching stuff has to evolve. It's kind of become this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whereas, see, I don't get that much shocked anymore by that stuff. Murder or
crime,
she sleeps to death.
Well, yeah, and
we fall asleep to Dateline.
I do, and I can just close my eyes. But the thing that bothered me, which made me feel like, am I old all of a sudden, you know, or whatever, is that I thought that there was entirely too much gratuitous sex.
Yeah.
Especially, like, and I get that, and we've talked about this, and again, let me preface this with, I am very, very liberal, and I'm very active in the LGBTQ+ community, because I really, really
believe
in it, and stuff. Right. But even if it was heterosexual sex or gay sex or whatever, I feel that Ryan Murphy's agenda is to kind of throw the gay sex in our face. And I felt like, to me, that wasn't necessary.
Right. There was a lot of gratuitous things there that may have been for his gratification as far as whatever.
I don't think it was like his gratification on like it gave him a Woody or whatever.
No, but like an agenda.
Or
at least whatever your thing is, maybe it's a kind of a one-trick pony deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I see your point there. And that's where it got problematic for me, not as far as the homosexual thing. The thing that I really liked turned into something that I didn't really like. So at the end, it totally goes off the rails in terms of, I think the whole conceit was like, what if? You know, we don't know that this happened, but what if he helped catch Ted Bundy? What if he was working with the original profilers, the guys from Mindhunters, and, you know, with whatever her name is, the Psyche, Killer Psyche League.
Yes,
Candace DeLong that was in the FBI profiler behavioral sciences and stuff, and Anne, the woman in there. So to tie all of these characters together that probably never met or wrote each other or radioed or anything is interesting, and that's an interesting choice. But when he was doing all that stuff with the gay actors and Anthony Perkins and Tab Hunter and all the other stuff, you're trying to get into the story and the background, and that seemed almost like, hey, look what I can do.
Yeah. You
know, it was showboating.
Yeah.
It seemed like it wasn't that it was gay. It was like, what's your point here?
Yeah. We all know at this point, I guess maybe we all don't, but that Tab Hunter and Anthony Perkins were gay. I don't know if they were a couple.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
I knew that they were both gay.
Okay.
And stuff, but I don't know. See, that's the other thing. Were they a couple? And what did it do to move along the story to have to say that?
Yeah. You didn't, you could have thrown in like, you know, I think that his influence was on Psycho, or, you know, put that way. But we don't need the sex part. So
exactly. And with so many sidebars like that, when you put them all together, and all the Holocaust stuff, and the Ilsa, the bitch of Buchtenwald or whatever that he supposedly idolized, I mean, we really could have cut this thing down to 4 or 5 episodes instead of 8 if we cut out that gratuitous stuff. Do you think that added to it at all?
I kind of like, I mean, like I said, I thought it was cool how they kind of flash forward and they did the psycho stuff. Yeah. I'm like, that's really cool. Everything.
Totally.
Yeah, knock off the other bullshit. You know, we didn't need to have that in there. But, you know, like you said, he's like, but look, it's my show. I can do this.
Uh-huh.
You know, those points like that. Thought some of the funniest things was the one last night where Charles Manson walks up.
Yeah.
Hey, it's good to meet you.
Well, see, that's again, like,
what's happening?
I think that's again going back to what did we like? I liked the what if.
Yes.
You know, and
me
stuff.
Too. At the end.
At the end, it was like, what if he did help catch Ted Bundy?
Yeah.
Or
exactly.
It made you root for him a little bit because it was so cute because he goes, I helped solve a murder. You know,
to do something,
they threw that in there, and then you read, and you're like, it didn't even have anything to do with that. I mean,
no.
I didn't even know Ted Bundy or anything. You know,
that, as far as we know.
Yeah, but that's sad.
But the thing, I know that you, Shelley, in particular, thought that the whole Holocaust stuff probably didn't need to be in there. I think that it went beyond what it needed to, but I did really enjoy the fact that, part of his schizophrenic behavior and his psychoticness and his break from reality was that he thought he was talking to, what was her name? Elsa? The woman from, that she was the butcher of...
Bucktonville?
Yes, she was somewhere in
like
the Holocaust.
Like a concentration camp.
And he was also talking to Charlotte...
The transgender, beautiful woman.
Birdman.
The woman that was all...
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, that was a great part, too.
She looked like a pinup girl.
She was one of the first ever transgendered women that was famous.
Well,
right.
You know, when he was in the movie, and they were showing her coming back, and then, you know, sitting there in the theater, and he stands up, he goes, well, what are you going to do now that you're a woman? You know, he wanted to know answers.
He was talking to the screen, like
she was gonna answer, because you know he had that curiosity in him. You know, wanted to know, but that was a good. I thought that was a good part too when he was talking to her, and you know she was asking what makes you have these feelings and this.
Right.
Well, I think I feel like you. I can't, sorry.
Well,
you do.
You know,
but that he wasn't really talking to her because he was schizophrenic. He was actually talking to his therapist. But he had that break.
In his head, he thought he was actually having...
He was actually talking to other people and stuff.
That was a clever way to explain and get his actual diagnosis.
Agreed. Yeah. But I do think that until... Like, I would say that was the last half of... Well, actually, probably the last third of the series. Whereas the first two-thirds, when they were going back to the Holocaust stuff and back to stuff, I wasn't quite understanding... why it was necessary, I wasn't even understanding what was really going on.
It was a weird stylistic choice, I think.
Yeah, I was wondering with that if they were trying to show that some of that could affect somebody with mental illness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
By them seeing that, all that type of stuff, that, just different ways that that... How easily it was out there.
Right.
I mean, because it was, it was, easily for people to see. So maybe they were like, material like that could really...
Well, and I think that that Ryan Murphy also wanted to show how easily manipulated he was.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he was manipulated by what his, he went against everything his mother told him was not right. He was like, well, I'll show you type of thing.
Right.
He also, everything that the girl, what's her name, Alta?
Adeline,
thank you.
Sure.
I think in real life it was Alta.
Oh.
And stuff, but Adeline, which was his girlfriend, not girlfriend, he thought it was his girlfriend. She was kind of just using him. That anything she said, he agreed with. And she kind of was able to satiate his morbidness because she was bringing the pictures and the Holocaust stuff and everything to him that made him more...
susceptible.
To all that
being
stuff.
Influenced. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And, of course, even now, the Holocaust is shocking.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
In a no TV, no radio, whatever world, and you see those photos, and there's no AI, there's no way that people are using Photoshop or whatever. It probably would warp right-minded people.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And if he was schizophrenic and he's hearing things, maybe when the Holocaust victims were running when he was in the field and stuff, maybe he was seeing things also.
Yeah.
You know, because
exactly.
the seeds had been planted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's a lot to process.
I don't
think if anybody hasn't watched it yet, don't go into it with a literal mindset.
Absolutely.
Although the things that actually did happen, the grave robbing and, you know, the things that we have proof that actually happened, are photographed so, or filmed so, so raw.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had to be.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
That's
I mean?
That's so that we get the picture.
Right. And
yeah.
I, you know, always heard the stories and read the articles and, you know, heard the podcasts and stuff, but to see that with your own stupid eyeballs, it's hard. I hope it's always like that for me.
Yeah.
I don't want to become desensitized.
No, exactly.
Like
yeah.
Well, and the thing that's funny is that you, like you just said, that you knew what you were kind of getting into.
Right.
I didn't. And me being such a true crime buff and a serial, I'm like am fascinated by serial killers
right.
and stuff like that. That I remember Daryl's like, now when we were starting to watch it, he's like, now what's up with this guy?
What's with this guy's shoes? I have no idea.
I have no idea. I've never
so
heard of
him. We're watching in three different ways.
Yeah, that's the funny thing because I, you know, after we had watched the first episode, I had talked to my, my uncle and I'm like, you know, I said this, we're watching this weird show we started and about a guy back in the 50s that, you know, dug up graves and he said his name like it was, right off his tongue. Oh, you mean Ed Gein?
Yeah, very
like, well. It was more of his.
But you know, I would have never thought that he would have known. But you know, even then, you know, like, oh God, yeah, he was probably on the news so much. Like, you know, that was probably like one of the biggest.
Dahmer.
Yeah, he was the first guy. Yeah.
Well, because like, I mean, who do you guys remember the first time you saw a serial killer getting arrested on TV? I think mine was Dahmer.
I think it was Dahmer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
John Wayne Gacy was the first one I remember.
Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy was quite, well, because he was here in Colorado.
And I remember when he was getting executed, finally.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah, because the news flashed to it, and they're like, we're going live to hear it. You know, they used to do stuff like that back in the day, you know? And nowadays, you hear about it, but you don't see it. But
well, that's the thing, is nowadays, you know, if it's, there's not three channels.
Right.
Yeah. It's not,
well, no, there's a million.
Our whole world is going to be watching one of three things.
Right.
We don't have 170,000 things to stream on TV.
God,
exactly.
I can't remember what the deal was, but I was like, oh God, maybe 14 or 12 or 13 years old. And my mom on Channel 6, they showed a live execution of three women that were beheaded.
Oh my God.
And she goes, we're going to stay up and watch this.
In our lifetime?
On Channel 6, yes.
What in the whole
world? It was the.
No,
it wasn't in Colorado. It was in another country.
That's what I was going to say.
But yeah, but they actually had it.
Wow.
I remember.
Was she trying to teach you something?
My mama was not like Ed's mama. My mama was teaching just
you better be good boy. oh my
As God. She was sitting there sharpening up a knife.
Did you clean your room? The first crazy thing that I saw on TV that my mom actually threw her hand over her mouth and gasped and then took me out of the room was the Jim Jones massacre. And that was camera from the airport with all those bodies.
Yeah.
And then I remember we were at my aunt and uncle's house in Ackworth, Georgia, and they had just had on TV the map of the crawl space of John Wayne Gacy.
Oh.
And they just kept bringing bodies out.
Oh, yeah, with all that
blood. All those boys.
Yeah, and stuff. They're digging them up and handing them. Yeah.
So,
oh, God.
Nightmare. I have to, like, put this perspective.
Yeah.
Daryl's saw beheadings on Channel 6 with his mother. You were sitting there with your mom watching Jim Jones and John Wayne Gacy.
Lisa's over here freaking out about Bambi's mom.
I was in the theater, exactly. And my mom took me out of the theater because Bambi's mom was there.
Well, it's because your mother loved you.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
it's
know,
weird that I'm the weirdest one out of this.
Yeah, me and Shell, we're desensitized, Lisa. No, the funny
just
thing.
Had to grow up faster.
Well, and, you know, that's the weird thing. I mean, public television back in the day used to show, and my mom said, okay, there, you know, she was kind of, I don't know if she's weird or just said, thought it was important for me to see. Also, a guy that they lethal injected. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, so your mom was into snuff films.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, but seriously, I do wonder what her motivation was. I think that would be horrifying for me to see a real person. Not that these real people weren't important or whatever, but I've never seen a real person be murdered, and I hope that never
happens.
Weird,
yeah.
Did you, okay, I don't want to go off the rails on this, but I do anyways.
Yeah.
Did your mom ever wake you up or, like, make you watch something to teach you a lesson? Let me preface this with, I remember my dad waking me up, and he's like, Lisa, you need to watch this. And he took me downstairs to where the TV was. This is when you didn't have a TV in every room or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We went into the living room, and I don't even remember what the name of the movie was or whatever, but it was a movie about this little boy who had Down syndrome. And he was run. They were running in like the Special Olympics, and his friend fell.
Oh,
and he was at the finish line, and he turned around and went to go get his friend, and carried him over the finish line with him. And he was going to win the gold and didn't.
Oh my god!
And he wanted me to see that, and
was that Downey Be Down?
Why didn't you turn out better?
I don't know.
My parents just let me sleep.
Maybe that's why.
Maybe that's
why I'm always tired.
Lisa, in this day and age, she's like, I'm going to bed. I'm like, okay.
I'm like, teach me compassion.
But I really,
no, that's sweet. I mean, yeah.
This is so sweet.
Yeah.
I love you, Mike.
We're staying up till late to watch these people beheaded. Lisa gets to watch a little Downey get helped up cut across the lawn or whatever.
Oh
my gosh. Not the lawn, the
that is so funny.
That is a beautiful, beautiful story. Well, I think that this part, Daryl can do, and I want this because I think it's interesting that he didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, with my question to you, which was going to be part of our original outline, what famous movies and murderers or whatever that do we know or suspect is real that he inspired, and how is that all connected? So, just popular movies.
Well, of course.
Inspired by it.
They did say that, you know, the Psycho for one,
mm-hmm.
because even when he was in that hospital, he still referred to Mother as Mother. People said that they'd hear him, you know, when he was in town, he always talked about his mother. So that's where, you know, Psycho led into that part.
Well, and I think that you guys did a little bit more research on the real Ed Gein. Mm-hmm. And was it true that he kept a corpse upstairs? It was not his mother's, but it was one he dug up and called her mother, yes?
I'm assuming so, because that's consistent with all of the things.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what
Then, you know, the whole... he never killed anybody with the chainsaw.
Okay.
He did that, but they led that. They could use that because they had he did wear their skin and their bodies, which, you know, so that they kind of...
As one does. Yeah.
Leaded with that. But, like, the thing with when Alfred Hitchcock was talking about it in that little series, you know, and, yeah, when he did Psycho, that ruined Anthony Perkins' career because that's all he was ever known as.
True.
You know, you're one-trick pony. And they're like, well... he's thinking about a part two, and that would have never came about. But, you know, even Alfred Hitchcock, he didn't do some stuff for a while because, like, he was like, they really like all this gore too much. You know, it's kind of crazy. And then the guys that did Leatherface and stuff, they read some of the stuff, and they're like, you know, we can use a bit of this. And you think about it, all that has gotten even up to your Michael Myers and, you know, those, it's just little bits of it, you know, because...
That blank face or the different face, the mask.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even, you know, the guy would give you nightmares about him, so you got Freddy Krueger that comes along, you know, kind of, you know, it's so, the funny thing was, like I said, heard an interview, they're like, back in the day, our monsters were the Wolfman and Frankenstein, and we were afraid of that. But when a real monster was a real person, that was a game changer.
Yeah.
For horror movies and everything. So, I mean, even still to this day, I mean, you know, the guy, has somebody reaching down, we just take a little bit of this and we're going to add it to this character.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, where he inspired
Buffalo Bill.
Well, yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins is his character, or whatever, is one of the first examples of them showing, let's talk to a criminal to see how a criminal thinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just fascinated by that. That was before Mindhunter came out and all that other stuff. And that actor who played Buffalo Bill, you don't see him in anything either, except for really hilarious memes. he's had one where he's like on a dating site on Tinder or something. He's like, I like a bigger gal. And yeah, come on over to my place. I'm really into bugs. I'm a bug collector.
Well, you know who took from him though was Diddy. You know, he used lotion for everything. You know, Diddy used baby oil.
That's how they both liked lubrication.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is though, I mean, we don't know who, maybe that actor that was in it has been in other stuff.
And he's so good, we don't know.
We just don't know what he looks like, because he was like, what he looked like in that was so...
Oh, he's in other stuff.
Yeah. It was spectacular. But when they started playing that song, Goodbye Horses or whatever, I'm like, oh, here we go. Oh, fuck. That would be...
Yeah.
God, Spettle used to do that guy all the time.
Oh, my God.
But my friend Jeff, all the time, I mean, he stayed with us all the time. He would come out of the shower and just walk straight out to the front room. And do the tuck and roll with
it. Or he would be in the bedroom and he'd be like, Lisa, can you come here really fast? And I'd go, what's up? And I'd walk and he'd have his wiener tucked between his legs and he goes, what do you think?
Oh my God.
And stuff.
Am I pretty?
Yeah. And then he'd be like,
all the time. Or we'd be at a party and all of a sudden he'd look over and he'd have his pants dropped and he'd stand there, am I pretty?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, geez, guy.
Okay, Daryl, I'm assuming every guy has done that at least once.
Oh, yeah.
Does it hurt?
No.
I don't want to.
It hurts to try and do a walk, but it's...
If you just stand there and pose.
So, do you think, going back to the trans thing, in just this particular show, not other Ryan Murphy things, do you think it was helpful in a psychological aspect, or extraneous, or interesting? Did you have any feelings about it one way or the other? Either of you?
Well, I think that because the trans community is such in the spotlight right now and being so targeted,
mm-hmm.
More so than any other community, it seems to me.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think, like, I don't know. I think it all has to do with the watcher, because I think in this in particular, it showed kind of that he did it not because he was trans whatsoever, but because he was not allowed to experience the female body. And so because...
That was his way of
being able to experience a woman.
Right.
Because they had said that Ed Gein was not gay or bisexual or trans or anything other than straight.
Pretty panties.
Well, and I think that he wanted to be able to see pretty panties on a girl, and he never could because he couldn't get close to a live woman.
That is a very logical explanation.
Yeah, but I could also see people who are crazy... being like, I told you trans people are crazy, when it's not, he wasn't a trans person.
Right.
And stuff, he didn't want to be a woman.
At the most, yeah.
At the most, which I don't even think he was really that, but at the most he was a cross-dresser, he wasn't trans, and people need to get that into their mind, that
they're different.
First of all, none of them are bad.
Yeah, exactly.
A bad person's a bad person because they're a bad person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not because their body part or their sexual preference or the color of their skin or a man or woman.
Right.
A bad person's a bad person. So people can flip it and say, you know, well, you know, he was trans, that's why he was a serial killer. No, let's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't about any of that, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I think that somebody who could be watching it can flip it to make their agenda.
Because that's what people are starting to believe. You know, in that sense, that's where they're putting one-to-one together in that sense.
And I think with the Richard Specht character, that guy was terrifying. I watched, they did a not fictionalized, but a dramatized version of his story. He was the one that went in and killed all the nurses.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, nightmare. And that was interesting how they connected that as an inspiration for Ted Bundy to do that to the co-eds. But in any case, I do think that he did, after he was in the prison system for life, get a boob job.
Okay.
Or whatever. And then they kind of explained it in the thing as, and maybe he wanted to be transgender or maybe didn't. But could you imagine if you're going to be there for the rest of your life and you're a relatively young man, it's just like, well, how do I get my booze and cigarettes by becoming attractive to the other people that have money from booze and cigarettes? Yeah.
Well, like you said, I'm smart. You know, I know how to run the
system. Yeah, but how do you get a boob job when you're already in the system? Like, how does that happen?
Know.
You can hardly
I'll have to look into that. See
because
I mean, wonder.
You can't even get an appendectomy most of the time. You're,
right.
Your appendix just blows up. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Hi, well, excuse me, I'd like to get boobs today.
I know you can now. I only have one example of it. But do you remember that guy that hijacked that boat? He said he was going to sell a boat or buy a boat from this rich couple. And then he killed him.
Oh, yeah.
Thought he killed him and threw him overboard when they were taped up and terrible. Basically, they drowned, and it was a nightmare.
Him and his wife, yeah.
But, yeah, they went to jail, and I think that he got reassignment surgery.
Oh.
Okay.
I don't know, but that was probably 30 years after Richard Speck. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what
yeah, that was an interesting character. I looked him up last night, remember, and I go, the Birdman was a real...
Oh, my God. But if you guys get a chance to watch the documentary that I saw about him with all the nurses and stuff, A, it's terrifying, and B, the guy that plays him is Corey whatever from the high school show.
Oh, Corey Nimnick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he plays him really good, but it was too scary.
Oh, scary.
It was too scary. I was just curious if you thought that the transgender thing enhanced it in any way. But you're right, it could be...
I think the thing is that I think that anything can be
detrimental.
Detrimental.
Yeah.
I was going to say detrimental.
Depends on the viewer and how bad that people want to.
Right. And I also do, because Ryan Murphy is in the gay community.
Uh-huh.
I think that he probably thought a lot about that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, as a filmmaker or as anybody this day and age and stuff, you have to consider your audience and consider that there are people all over the spectrum, you know, as far as, you know, what they're going to watch and what they're going to take from it. And you can only hope that they'll not make things bad that aren't supposed to be.
Yeah. And I think one thing we can all agree on, don't kill people.
Yeah.
Don't fuck dead people.
No.
Ooh, don't dig up graves.
No, yeah.
See, and that's the one thing I had never, ever heard anything of Ted Bundy going back
and having sex with
his victims.
Yeah, I think that was...
You know, I think that was another thing. They kind of wanted to kind of bring, let's bring a little bit of that into this story.
Yeah.
I never heard anything about that.
Yeah, that was artistic license, I think. There were a lot of things that they kind of sprung on us.
Yeah.
Just for sake of pace, maybe.
Maybe.
But so we talked about Ed becoming kind of a sympathetic character as it went on. What traits do you think made him sympathetic? Or even, God forbid, in some way relatable?
Well, I think it even goes back to when he was a child, or when, younger and being shut down, he just stayed kind of a simple person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what he did, like you said, it was just a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, and when he got into his older age, I think he just kind of still was, I think he still had that childlike mind.
Right.
So he stayed, stayed kind of...
And there's something about that that's almost like... It's not intentional sin, right? He just didn't know any better.
Yeah, well, like he said, he goes, I shouldn't be here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because he was in that loony bin, they got crazy.
Any
yeah.
of this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, in this day and age, he didn't even really kill that many people. It was the stuff with the already dead people.
You have to kill three people to be a serial killer, right?
So yes.
He wasn't really technically a serial killer.
Right. He was a serial digger upper.
Right. Yeah. But I think that what, to me, made him more endearing was the fact that his old-timey talk.
Yes.
And stuff, the way that he was like, well...
Folksy.
Yeah, very folksy. And he's like, well, I'll be jiggered. You know, said stuff like that. And it was just like, I just wanted him kind of to be like my grand... You know, it's like, I would have went and visited him. You know, I'd have played a game of checkers.
Right.
You know, it just seemed like he was...
And so, let him win.
And
that
kid was just so lonely. And you see and hear of so many terrible people that, have these, I don't know, just weird rage flipper switch, you know? Mm-hmm. They're just, like, ragey and, this crazy brutality and, like, the end of Ted Bundy's violent career and stuff. He just went berserker on all those women and stuff, you know, and just biting off nipples and just horrifying shit.
Think about it.
And he, of course, did horrifying shit, but He just seemed so soft-spoken and just wanted to be liked.
Yeah. The funny thing, there's no real live interviews with him.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
we're getting
but,
a version.
Yeah. But, so, you know, like people said, they always said, look at Dahmer. There are live interviews with him. He was as calm as, you know, he uh-huh. would sit there and talk like he, you know, he was the guy next door.
Like,
you know, yeah. Ted Bundy. He was smart as hell. Mm-hmm. You know, and same thing, well-spoken, and would talk, you wouldn't think that that guy was like, you know, like you say, biting off nipples and doing...
Well, and also, I mean, you know, Ted Bundy, they, you know, at the time, apparently, not to me, not my type, but everybody said how handsome he was.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, and that's why he lured women in.
Well, yeah, not only that, but, like, you're thinking, like, you have an Ed Gein who is a little bit, very simple. And also, you know, is not that attractive, this and that. Where he had to dig up his woman to have sex with them, Ted Bundy didn't have to do that. He could have had anybody he wanted to. So where's the connection on why he did it?
Right.
Chase,
mm-hmm. right.
you know, or just because there is this.
Well, and the same thing. You know, look at Jeffrey Dahmer was not a bad looking guy.
No, that's true.
You
too.
Know, and, yeah. and that's the thing.
Yeah.
To whereas like Gacy. Was kind of a creepy looking, you know, dude, you know,
sure.
like, you know, but, you know, he lured people. They have a certain charm. You
yeah,
know?
You'd have to. Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of
the Riz. The killer Riz. I like that.
My goodness.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, seriously, if Ed Gein really looked like that in real life, he would have had no.
Well, that's the funny thing, because this guy's fresh off doing that.
Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy. So he was pretty built still and everything. Because I'm like, I don't think he had the same body as you did.
Yeah, I can't. But he would dress. If you guys haven't seen it yet, he liked to dress in women's clothing, as we have said, mostly underwear and panties. And he had a killer ass body. I was like, good
yeah.
Lord.
Did anybody look up the guy that they supposedly interviewed? The shoe wearing guy that
oh,
had the shirt
Jerry
off.
Campos.
Is that a real guy?
It's a real guy.
Okay.
And no, I didn't look it up, but I think he might have been. I know he was on Mindhunter, which if you guys ever get a chance, watch the two seasons.
I want to see that.
Yeah, that was a weird character. You know,
yes.
I mean, they bring him in.
He's like, do you mind if I jerk off?
All four guys are like, they go like this. They just kind of turn their chairs.
Yeah, so I think we've established it's not for the kids.
Yeah, no, definitely no. This is
have the kids.
You know,
something else.
Yeah. Your kids are better off watching Bambi.
Did you guys have a favorite, like, side character? Was there somebody that you thought was interesting? One of the cops or anything like that? Because
Go ahead.
My favorite line, the poor kid who had to go see his mother dressed up and desecrated, strung up like an animal in the barn, where you could see right through from one end to the other, and they show everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's throwing up and this and that. And as time goes on, he is auctioning things off, and then they go on to the whole thing, like, we're all horribly fascinated by all of this stuff, and they were auctioning things off of his. And you know, yeah, we are all fascinated by it. Would I do something like that? I don't know. I don't want a nipple lamp in my house. And I just, but at the time, it was such a novelty, sounds too light of a word, but, you know, there was nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if I could have this historically famous, whatever. In any case, the guy who saw that of his mother starts, he goes around with a flask, and he's putting booze in his everything, right? In his coffee, in his whatever. And he goes to the police station, and his buddy...
He's a cop, by the way, yeah.
Yeah, and his buddy, who's a friend, goes, you know, I really think that you're drinking too much, buddy. I'm really worried about you. And he goes, when you see your mom's vulva, like, up close, being slaughtered and this, that, or whatever, I think I'm drinking just the right amount.
Yeah, that was good.
I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. The crazy part about it is they only took a small amount of stuff out of the house. The townspeople were so afraid, because this was a tight-knit, you know, a small town, they were so afraid, they knew it was going to become an attraction.
Right.
So they took, like, I think it might have even been days after they arrested him, took him to jail. Mm-hmm. They went out and burnt that. They
yes.
torched the house. So the police said, you know, we didn't get as much evidence as we needed to get. That was another thing that they, you know, didn't have against him, you know. And the townspeople were like, no, we don't want this turning into a three-ring circus and everybody coming into this small town. But I did watch these kids, I told you guys about it, that wanted, they were kind of, you know, horror chasers, you know, it's modern day stuff. So they went to that town, and, you know, the guy's videotaping, and he goes, we have been followed. since we got in, we pulled into town, we went and got some snacks. He goes, we have been followed everywhere we're going.
They don't want,
you know, still to this day, that small little knit town, get the fuck out of here.
That's right.
You know?
And I bet during that time, again, no internet, all the other stuff, it could have just been flat out superstition too. Let's like get the,
yeah, well, yeah, how long ago was, yeah, the like that devil lived there. But, mm-hmm. you know, so I was talking to my uncle about this. He goes, how do you think Boulder felt when JonBenet,
right.
he goes, it was like a three-ring circus. People were parking in the middle of the street and walking to take pictures of the house. And you know, oddly enough, same thing with the Mork and Mindy house. You know,
right,
people.
Right.
He goes, it, you know, they were like, you know, just back to back to back to drive by. He goes, so yeah. He goes, you know, the small town. You know, they don't want that. They obviously can't burn down the JonBenet built
they
house.
Can't or can they?
They well, they could because you know they did OJ's house. They tore that house down and built something else there, but. You know, I didn't think of it in that sense when he said that. He goes, well, think what that happened up in Boulder, you know.
Right.
Well,
right.
And getting back to what Shelley said about having the items auctioned off and it being kind of a niche or whatever, you know, to this day and age, John Wayne Gacy was putting his pictures that he drew up on eBay to make money for. People buy that shit.
Oh, yeah.
We went to a museum of that shit.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, we did that, and Daryl and I went to the one, Zach Began's museum
in Vegas.
In Vegas, and they had a whole serial killer. He had Jeffrey Dahmer's glasses.
Wow.
Vorkian's van.
He had Kevorkian's van,
where he killed his first victims.
That was interesting.
It was crazy. I mean, but that's the thing. You know, even back, you know, thinking way back then, those people go, we got to knock this down now. But, you know, too bad. There was probably some pretty interesting. You know.
Right. Some actual antiques that weren't
but foolish. I did read that there is a few people, but there are others that are on, like, you know, in different museums, and they're not real. And they say that it is,
yeah,
which is
like
kind of upset.
Or
and they're like stuff you see on, like you said, eBay. Mm-hmm. People, you know, but I found that pretty interesting. But I was kind of like, oh, I'm kind of happy for those township people because it gave them, you know, we just want this to end,
right?
You know, in a sense,
and I don't blame them.
But his cars did get auctioned off, you know, which I would like to see those. I mean, that you know, some of those cars and stuff would be kind of cool. But you know, I'm kind of weird like that.
Yeah, beautiful cars.
Yeah, there's some shocking things.
That museum we went to in Vegas was kind of weird. They had some weird stuff like that, but they had one of Patrick Swayze's
teeth.
And I'm like,
yeah,
they
had prove it.
Well, there's that. I did have a thing of authenticity, like a certificate.
Okay,
yeah. But they had
five
a
out of six dentists.
Yes, they had a whole room of serial killer stuff, but they also had a whole room of just celebrity, like dead celebrities.
Uh-huh.
They had... who's the guy?
Tattoo?
I was going to say the little guy. He was Philip Seymour Hoffman played him.
Oh.
Oh God.
Not on Boogie Nights.
No. He was a very eccentric.
Yes.
We'll
get there. We'll get there. We're doing this together.
Anyways, he was a very small. They had one of his suits.
Was it Truman Capote?
Yes.
Yes.
And just like, just really interesting.
Weird stuff, but yeah, you go from one room of all these serial killer stuff, and they're like, and here's Patrick Swayze's tooth. I'm like, well, put it over by next Dahmer's.
No,
put it by Dahmer's glasses.
No, that was a different room.
I know.
No, but they had the Annabelle doll.
Oh.
They had. Did you ever watch American Horror Story?
I watched the first season with the haunted house.
Oh, okay, but you haven't seen all of them. Did you see Freak Show?
No, I didn't. And okay. I watched some of the Kathy Bates New Orleans stuff.
Oh, okay.
Stuff. Yeah.
So in Freak Show, they have the smallest woman ever to live,
uh-huh.
and she's still alive. She's a little Indian lady.
Oh, she was there.
And she was there.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Wow.
She was waving to us and stuff. We're like, I go.
Oh, she was waving to you. I was still stuck in that other room.
That's for another show.
She left you in a scary place?
Yes.
She didn't want to go into the Annabelle room.
No, it was the box.
Oh,
let me tell this story. So this is a really, really cool tour. It's a whole house and different rooms are different themes. Like, sure. There was a Kevorkian one, and there was...
a dental one.
Patrick Swayze room. No, there was all clowns.
Dolls.
There's all... Yes. But anyways, there was this one, you walked into this room, and they were going to tell you about the next room.
Oh. Okay.
The next room had a box in it that had a spirit in the box that is the most evil spirit that's ever been.
Nope.
And so you go in there, and you have to give it some kind of an offering.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, because they even had video of, like, Post Malone went in there, and it, like, zapped him or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, oh my God, I can't, whatever. All this stuff, it's supposedly this really awful spirit. So when they're telling us about it in this room,
one more room,
in the one, yeah, before we go into the box room, they're like, if anybody doesn't want to go, you don't have to, you know, or whatever. And I was like, fuck that. Why would I be around something that's evil
they
that
could attach,
like,
to
attach to me?
What's the benefit?
Exactly. Yeah. And just to say that I did. And so everybody in our whole group wanted to go except for me. And so they all got their sacrifices. It could be anything, mm-hmm, penny, gum, whatever. And so they walked through that room, went back into the hall, and then went to the next room, which was the Annabelle room.
Okay.
After the Annabelle room was the little girl room with the little freak show lady.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyways, they walked through that room and completely forgot that they had lived, which is fine for the, you know, all the people and the guy, the host that, uh-huh, was walking, because they don't know me.
Right.
My fucking husband didn't know me. He went to three other rooms before he realized.
Well, then that I go, when do we get my wife? And the guy goes, oh, so he goes, you guys stay here. So he went through a different way, and he was able to get her and just bring her past all that
so
other
I didn't,
stuff.
I mean, I saw the little lady, but I didn't get her whole spiel.
Yeah.
Right, because you were deserted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But here's where it was kind of a fucked up deal, because you're supposed to leave an offering, mm-hmm, in this room at the box. Well, I didn't have anything on me because I didn't have no change or anything. The only thing I had was my wedding ring. And I'm like, I can't leave that.
So
I left an IOU.
So he didn't leave anything.
I didn't leave anything. And it was weird because we got back home, mm-hmm, and a couple of weird things happened.
Oh.
But I did, my friend Danica went a few years later, mm-hmm, and I asked her if she would
take it. So Lisa said, here, I physically had detouched this. Take this and leave it in there. And she goes,
and say, this is from Daryl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's the late offering. And by chance would have it, that's when we hit a pot of gold and we bought this house.
No.
No.
Yeah.
But it was funny because I was so enthralled by this. I'm like, you know, I was talking to people. God, what do you think's in the next room? We're going and this and that. And then I went, and I told the guy, wait for got my wife, and he goes, oh, he laughs, he goes, I'll be right back, but he goes, like, couldn't even see doors, huh, and he goes, and he opens up a door and just walks, I'm like,
whoa.
And he comes, and he goes, here's
I was, like, reading shit.
And they were all clapping when Lisa
no
came.
No idea where to go.
Yeah, I
she was
like,
in there for about 20 minutes, yeah.
That's yo, man.
Yeah.
And so they clapped when Lisa came back, she's all,
what the fuck, you guys?
I know. I was like, okay. Because I wasn't about to, like, leave by myself.
Lisa goes through.
I wouldn't know how to get out. Yeah.
Is this the box room?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I would have been really scared.
It was scary.
Yeah.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
We got more things to talk about, or should we just go into the well? What do you guys
it's,
think?
What are we
we're right at 56 minutes.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you guys, if you have any questions, apparently we're experts. Bum, bum.
But yeah, let's take a quick break.
We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
Okay.
Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa, better run, run, run. Witches are doing it now. We talk about music, pets, and stupid criminals. This is the WoW.
Alrighty, guys, we are back with our WoW, and whew, man, that was quite a show.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're getting to the WoW. I needed a break. That was a lot. But What do we got going on? I think, Lisa, what do you have this week?
I have animals.
Animals?
Yeah.
Shell's got music, and I got criminals. But let's mix it up a little bit. Let's have some music talk.
You got it.
A little music talk would be good.
You got it. So, I don't know about you guys, but I was really kind of enchanted with the soundtrack of the Ed Gein story.
Oh, yeah. Especially Sympathy of the Devil.
Yes. Oh, yes. I thought they chose great songs, just like Daryl does on our podcast. But a lot of them were very time specific, you know, of the era. So they had appropriate songs during the Texas Chainsaw Massacre times, right after Vietnam and early 70s. And then during his heyday of Killing and Digging and all that, there was this really innocent Andrews Sisters type soundtrack, you know, on the LP when he's doing these horrific things. And then, of course, you know, they go up to Silence of the Lambs time with Hugh Lazarus, Goodbye Horses, and all that. So anyway, I just wanted to read you the name of a couple of songs. And I'm actually, I don't know, thinking about buying some of these because I thought it was really, really sweet and really well done. But also, it might give me nightmares.
Yeah.
So anyway, some of the singers, they had the Abba Dabba Honeymoon by Arthur Collins, I'll Be With You in Apple Blossom Time by the Andrews Sisters, I'll Be Seeing You, Vera Lynn, What a Difference a Day Made by Dinah Washington, The Glory of Love by Bette Midler, Don't Forbid Me by Pat Boone, Don't Forbid Me, Cuddle Up a Little Closer, Love You Mine, inappropriate for the circumstances. But in any case, if you feel like it might be too visually hard for you to get through this series, it's not mandatory.
No,
yeah.
You know, and if it's going to hurt you, we're giving you a warning. It's
not for the weak at heart.
All the triggers are pointed at you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in any case, you can enjoy the music and read up on the story if you want to. But you basically got the gist of it by listening to us today.
Oh, yeah.
But
we did a good layout.
Yeah, the soundtrack, fabulous. Well done.
Okay, Daryl, you go next because mine's light and yours is dark.
Well, mine is right up the alley of what we're talking about. It's something I just learned was yesterday.
Yesterday.
And I didn't even know anything about this, but rapper turned murderer.
What?
Yes. The rapper known as, hold on, let me get my glasses on so I can
Lil
see.
What? Lil asshole?
Big.
Little Ed.
Lil
okay.
Big guy?
The rapper known as Big Lurch, whose real name is Anton Singleton, was convicted of murder and cannibalism, cannibalizing his 21-year-old roommate, Tanisha Sales, in 2002. Never even heard about this guy, but okay. He currently is serving a life sentence in prison, well, as should be. It says the murder on April 10th, 2002 in Los Angeles, Singleton brutally killed Tanisha. Her body was found mutilated with a knife in her shoulder blade, her chest cut open, and there was also bite marks on her face and a lung missing.
Jesus Christ.
This guy,
that's very specific.
This guy went cuckoo, okay? The arrest, police found Singleton outside of the apartment naked and covered in blood, barking like a dog. And he was trying to be Snoop Dogg, but no. The medical examiner later found human flesh in his stomach.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they parents of a child together?
No, they were just roommates. Oh, okay. Yeah. It said PCP was what they found in his body. So what he had done, he had been smoking PCP and stuff, so he was hallucinating.
Oh, no.
And he thought that he seen the devil.
Mm-hmm.
So when his roommate was in there, he thought the devil had entered her body. So he was convinced he needed to cut her open to get the devil out of her body. So that's why he was
trying to help.
He was being a martyr.
It's an exorcism.
Yeah. But so he pulled her innards out and then I guess cut her chest open and then pulled up her lung and was eating her lung.
So it's really not that bad.
No, so in 2003, Singleton was convicted of murder and a aggravated mayhem. Well, yeah,
yeah.
I think. His insanity defense was not taken. The drug defense and everything, they're like, well, you know, you did this yourself. Yeah, you're still a dangerous person. So, yeah. So the insanity plea got thrown out. The drugs they threw out. They was sentenced to 2 life terms without possible of parole.
Bye.
Bye.
That's what I don't miss.
Big lurch.
You know, so when people do things like after they kill somebody and they dismember them or something like that, they usually get additional charges. I'm not trying to be gross here, but like abuse of a corpse or something like that. I wonder if he got anything else. Because you would think that cannibalism was kind of a charge in some
way. Well, I think sometimes because it mucks up the judicial system and there's
just
too many things.
Let's just get him out of
here.
We have him for two life sentences. Right. Why worry about
exactly.
That could have been they got him for murder and then they got him for the
we want to make sure that we have
that's
something.
That's how we got him 2 lives.
The overkill on the overkill.
Yes.
It did say that when the, you know, like he was still chewing on lung when they found him. But
I also read that he was taking marijuana doobies and dipping them into formaldehyde.
That's a thing. That people do that.
Yeah.
Why? Why can't we just be happy?
Why can't we just be drunks like me? Marijuana be enough?
Right.
Yeah.
But so I first heard that, and these guys have a great podcast too, and it's the Disgraceland.
Yes. Mike told me about that.
He does music stuff. Uh-huh. Well, I guess the guy was an up and coming rapper, but he does some great stuff.
Awesome.
Not Big Lurch, but Disgraceful.
Right.
Disgraceland.
Sorry. Stop. Okay. He wanted to be heard.
He wanted to be in on it.
That's right.
Okay.
What you
got, Liz? Is mine. Mine is Aminals.
Oh.
The feline named Korshik, Russian for crumbs, was caught mid-escape from a pet weight loss center in Perm, Russia, where he'd been placed on a strict diet and exercise plan.
Oh my God.
Photos show the hefty cat tipping the scales at nearly 38 pounds, wedging awkwardly between bars of a shoe rack. His face buried in a bright blue crock during his failed breakout attempt. According to the staff, Kershif had been fed a steady diet of cookies and soup before arriving at the center, causing him to balloon to a whopping 38 pounds, so heavy that he could no longer walk on his own.
Oh, my God.
And here is a picture of the cat.
Oh, my God. That is a moose.
Aww.
And so I don't know. That's all I have. But he was stuck. And did you see how he was stuck? Hold on. I get him stuck trying to get out of the weight loss center.
You are the best.
Yeah.
I'm
going to have to get a little bit more information on that to see if he ever did lose the weight or whatever. But Crumbs is definitely a cute little kitty.
And a cute name.
It is cute. Crumbs.
Yeah. He pudgy.
He's a pudgy Crumbs.
I'm used to getting crumbs.
I want some more cookie crumbs.
Did you say that his diet previously was soup and cookies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which that'd be a great diet for me.
Hey, sure thing.
You want some more of this stew?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You guys, thank you for listening to another Good Witch, Bad Witch show. Have an awesome Halloween. We also wanted to just give a little recognition to a listener of ours that passed away last week. His name was Leonard Atencio, and he was not only a friend of ours, but a listener and
a loyal listener.
Loyal listener and quite something of a guy.
He was quite an eccentric guy.
Yes, he was something else. So to all his friends and family, God bless and rest in wherever you are, Leonard.
Yes, and I think that if anybody wants to honor his memory, they should go to a tanning bed and sing Wing Chun songs.
Yeah.
That's how I choose to honor Leonard.
Yes, I would love that.
Do yourself a couple of shots. The guy, he loved his shots. So.
There you go.
That was a good man. Thank you for bringing that up, Lisa. And to all of you, happy, happy Halloween. Be safe out there. Don't mess with cats. It's also the name of a documentary.
Don't mess with cats.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We sure appreciate all of you and in this very special time that is our season, all of us witches. I feel really grateful and honored to work with you, my friends.
You too.
And all of you listeners. I just think you're some of the most special people. So anyway, while you're doing that, stay witchy, my friends.
Stay bitchy.